Hey, this is Casey Shearer.
And this is Ray.
Do you like pop culture?
We're pretty sure you do.
Then come on over and check us out at deluxeedition.show.
You will not be sorry. Or maybe you will be. I don't know.
Latest episode of the podcast that wouldn't die. I'm your host Kevin. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hello.
This week on the podcast, we're doing the classic David Lynch movie Eraserhead. Some say it's a horror classic. Film. Definitely a cult classic. Again, it's listed as a horror film, but I don't know what I would describe this film as.
I was utterly baffled the first time I saw it in college. Here's the backstory. I'm in college. I had some homies who went to College of the Redwoods, but rented a house in Eureka, a former brothel. It was the weirdest apartment. It was on an upper floor of an old Victorian building, but it's just a series of four hallways. Like, there was nothing in the center. It was like clearly... Who knows what is in the center, but there's no access to it from theirs.
Gotcha.
And there's a back door that is bricked up, which was supposedly where, when it was a brothel, was the escape route. But the landlord had since bricked it up. So it was so bizarre. It was just a series of rooms that went around the central giant wall that who knows what was inside there. No windows. Just a solid wall. Anyway, it was all over town. We were all going to go see Eraserhead. You know, because quite frankly, the cover looks crazy. So you're like, yeah, let's go see it. And I'm telling you, I was dumbfounded. I had no idea what the shit is going on. But now looking back years and years later, suddenly I have perfect clarity.
Shut the hell. That's madness. Okay, let me stop you right there. Each week on the podcast That Wouldn't Die, we discuss guilty pleasures and forgotten classics of the horror and sci-fi genre.
Which one is this?
That's the question. Aaron made me do this in revenge for me making her do the remake of House of Haunted Hill. And on some level, I feel like I deserve some punishment. I don't know if punishment fit the crime, though.
Can't agree it was a crime.
It was a crime.
It was committed.
I thought this was a misdemeanor. You're giving me a capital offense on
no,
this.
No, I'm giving
boy.
You like Louisiana justice. 14
that's
years
true.
Old, stole head caps. That's life.
That's life. Clack, clack, clack. Let me tell you this story. And this is why I was telling you before we went on that I'm super busy these next couple of weeks.
As I
may have told you, a week from Saturday, I'm going to be on a podcast, the Halloween Megapod, where we're going to discuss every Halloween movie in existence. And today, I was watching the two Rob Zombie Halloween movies, which I had never seen before.
And now you love Rob Zombie?
Oh, no. There are people who love Rob Zombie, who
motherfucking
his
do.
Church. You can say that. I agree.
I have PTSD because Kevin will just text me randomly while I'm at work going, I just had to edit 30 F-bombs from the last podcast. Now I'm scared. He's so angry.
Be. This is the cold hard reality. Taking a break from Rob Zombie for a second. I like having a few F-bombs of Aaron sprinkled in for a little flavoring, but too much spice spoils the stew, as far as I'm concerned. And what I tell her is that every time she drops an F-bomb, that adds 5 minutes to my editing time.
Well, let me tell you what, you're f***ing out of your mind, because saying f*** is the f***ingest, greatest f***ing thing that ever arrived.
That's 25 extra minutes. Hope it was worth it.
At least it's all bunched together.
I might just cut this whole section. just to make it easy on myself.
Damn your eyes. Damn your eyes.
No, but if you have not seen a Rob Zombie movie lately, they are, let me just say, distasteful at best. Gratuitous nudity, which normally I don't have an issue with. Even I was having an issue with it in these two films. And it's like the violence. It's like, I like a fun slasher. Like, I feel like 80s slashers, generally speaking, are kind of fun.
They're innocent.
Well, people die, but it's not a 20-minute stabbing scene. You know what I mean? You get one stab and you're good to go. With Rob Zombie at the helm, it's like he's in there with the, sharpening the knife for 15 minutes, choosing, is it a paring knife for the scene? Or am I using the butcher cleaver? It's like, I don't need 20 minutes of the stabbings. Anyway, I doubt.
I don't even need 3 minutes of Rob Zombie. So how about that?
I'm right there. Well, and you and I know this. We saw House of a Thousand Corpses when it first came out. That was his first foray. And both of us looked at each other and were like, no, I think we're good. We don't ever have to see another Rob Zombie.
Ever again.
Ever
check
again.
Boxed.
I don't need to see all 1,000 corpses. Okay? I don't need all 1,000. That's all I'm saying. Moving on.
And Karen Black. I mean, we went to fucking Fangoria. Oh, they're falling
there's
out
the
now.
Break.
Okay. We went to Fangoria because Karen Black was going to be there with crazy Rob Zombie and the rest of the kooks. And then we're like, that's enough.
Was it? It's that thing I've often said. It's like Rob Zombie knows what aspects are supposed to be in a horror film, but he doesn't know how to place them artfully. So he just kind of pours them in a blender, grinds them up, and then just kind of pours it out. And they go, there it is. Voila. Horror. So not
my thing.
There's
plenty of men who love that crap.
Ain't no lie. Ain't no lie. Aaron.
Bye, bye, bye.
Give us your 30-second synopsis, if you can, of Eraserhead.
A man is trapped in a loveless marriage, unprepared for fatherhood, and it crushes him. The end.
Yeah. Somebody, I was reading some behind-the-scenes stuff, and Mel Brooks loved this movie. Loved it. He said, it is an immature man grappling and fleeing from his responsibilities.
100%.
That's what Eraserhead. And
when I was younger, I never saw that. I was utterly confused. Now, having had a child and been married, I'm like, it's so clear. How did I miss all of this?
Well, and you can see that. There is. But there's a lot of extra crap. There's a lot of extra crapola where you're like, and what is this? And what does this mean? And what the hell are you talking about? Yes, there is a basic plot of he knocked up his girlfriend, who he's not that thrilled about, and she's not that thrilled about him either, truth be told. They get
quite frankly,
married.
He's the shining star of this whole thing. He is the most normal of anyone in this, including their jacked up baby.
Yes, she gives birth to a mutant. For reasons unknown. Now, people say it's meant to be kind of post-apocalyptic, but frankly, I don't see enough of the outside world to have any opinion if it's supposed to be a post-apocalyptic.
It's kind of Dickensian almost. It's like you're living in these flop houses.
Yes.
You just hear the roars of the factories and the back. I mean, it's shot beautifully. And the auditory, just the sounds, oh my God, it just adds to it. It is so depressing and stressful and claustrophobic and disturbing. Nothing's funny.
Nothing's funny. Not at all. It's interesting because I went
on. For real, just dementia.
I went on a deep dive of some of his other movies, and the reoccurring theme is even the actors don't know what the hell's going on. That I was reading about Mulholland Drive, which he did with Naomi
Another
Watts.
Confuser. Most of them I predict, but Mulholland Drive I need to go back and watch because I was equally baffled.
The actor Justin Theroux, who plays, I think his character's name is Adam in Mulholland Drive. people interview him and he's just like, you can ask, what does this mean? What is my motivation? He's happy to hear you ask. He just won't ever tell you. So you're kind of wandering through it blind. Was this actor going, it's like you're wearing a blindfold trying to
make
act
a choice.
These things.
Right. Make a choice. You get no guidance. Like,
whether or not you just give me my scenes to deal with or you give me the whole play, it does not matter because I will never know. So it's not, and David Lynch obviously famously will not talk about what do his movies mean and what is he trying to say and what's the plot? What is it about? But you figure, hopefully he shares it with the people on the screen. He does not. He does not. Jack Nance, who plays Eraserhead, just tells people, hey, just a movie. Whatever, you know, doesn't matter.
That I
people
was filming like, for 5 years.
For 5 years. People take this stuff too seriously. It's just a movie. That's what Jack Nance said. So that's
God
good time.
Bless him.
God bless him. Well, and here's my feeling about art, and you may disagree. It can be abstract. Art can be abstract. But I kind of feel like the artist has to know what they're trying to convey. Even if it's not readily available, and you're an artist much more than I am, even if it's not readily apparent to the person consuming the art, I feel like then if the artist doesn't know, then it's just chaos. Then it's just, I might as well just put...
Who says the artist doesn't know? I think he knows.
I wonder if that's true. I wonder if he knows and he just isn't sharing, or if he's just like, F it. I'm going to roll a monkey in paint and let it do what it do.
No. Because I read like this one, which was very confusing the first time I saw it, is autobiographical.
That's true. I read that as well. I read that this
so
is meant
he
to
know
be.
Where he was going.
But there's, again, there are things, and we're not even getting into this yet. There are parts.
We haven't even talked about the movie. We're already behind the scenes. Yeah,
we're already behind the scenes. Let's stop right there. Time out. When was the first time you saw it? You said you saw it while
college.
You were in Humboldt.
Of course,
in college.
Everybody has to see. This is a college movie.
It's a college movie. Do you know the first time I was introduced to Eraserhead?
Did I show it to you?
My older sister, Erin. Showed, I want to say, 5 or 6 year old brother. And the only part I recall.
I love that I was in college, but you were 6 years old.
Absolutely. I was very young. And the only scene I remember, because you didn't show me the whole thing, you showed me one scene. It was the crazy mutant baby with like the chicken pox or whatever the hell it was.
Oh, God.
You showed it. And I remember you thinking it was hilarious. Laughing. You thought it was so funny. This crazy mutant baby. And I was traumatized. So there
First
you go.
Of all, your math is off. So
I
wouldn't have been five.
I was in the crib.
I was babysitting. I was 35 and you were 2. And
That's
I lined
exactly
up. I lined up you and the twins that were still in the womb.
That's correct.
And I Malcolm McDowell'd you and pried your eyes open and just came by with drops as we just
watched.
It was
like David Lynch.
The show over and over.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I would have been 5 or 6, but I was young. I was young. And you were not as young. Let's just say
Is this
that.
One of those recovered memories?
It was a recovered memory. I remember there was some kind of devil worship going on. The naked elderly were there.
There used to be 3 other siblings, but we don't talk about them anymore.
They were sacrificed to Mammon. Anywho, no, and then I wound up watching it like in its entirety, maybe 10 years ago, and going, Oh, yes. This is why I hate David Lynch. Got it.
You hate David Lynch?
Hate him.
Well, I will apologize. I have no memory of this, but if you feel it happens, I won't deny it.
This was, truthfully, I wasn't traumatized. I was more confused by it than anything else. You want to talk about trauma? I remember watching Nightmare on Elm Street with the older sibs. They were watching it and I stumbled into the room and I was up all night having horrible nightmares.
That again, was the first they were time. In high school, but you were five.
I crawled out of my crib, yes, and staggered down the hall. Who knows where mom and dad were? No, I was. I want to say I was probably like in fourth grade or third grade, something like that. So not a crib, but still far too young. So there you go, Aaron. Why don't we go right to the highlights? I took this many notes, which for our non-listening, watching people, I took zero notes. So what do you got?
First, I have the opening sequence where you have like the floating head and like the planet, and I don't know what the hell was going on. Was that God pulling the levers?
Yes. Crazy old leopard. I have no idea. Pranks. Yes.
I also have carrying out of a tunnel. I mean, they're walking into a tunnel, like out of the LA River. What's that about?
That's correct.
Oh, and one of the classic moments is, of course, something right out of the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo. Let's all have chicken for dinner.
Oh, God. Okay. Yes. There are multiple moments when something kind of vile occurs in this movie that is deeply unsettling, where he goes to visit his girl. He's been invited to his girlfriend's parents' house for dinner. He hasn't seen his girlfriend in a while, doesn't know why. And there's like a pot full of like little like Cornish game hen type things, right? And they ask him to cut the chicken. And he pulls out one and he tries to cut into it and immediately starts oozing.
Well, they're like man-made chickens. It's the Impossible Burger of chickens. Remember how Impossible Burger bleeds? So clearly whoever invented that also watched this. They're like, yeah, wouldn't that be great if we can get fake meat to bleed too? So the first thing I saw that manufactured chicken that bleeds, I was like, Impossible Burger.
It was horrifying. It was horrifying.
It's just reinforcing this, what the hell did you get yourself into? Now you're tied to these freaks for the rest of your mother-loving life. And this all happens while he's on vacation. Literally the worst vacation in the history of cinema.
The worst vacation. Well, so they get, she's pregnant with his mutant child. And I guess she's been gone for 9 months. I mean, what the hell? She bounced, hasn't come around a lot lately, gave birth to a mutant baby. And then it's like, hey, the mom's like, hey, you need to marry my daughter while I'm trying to make out with you. I got to get a little peace for myself before the nuptials.
Yeah, what the hell is it's that? Like freaks. There's nothing that's not freakish about it. While he's sitting with his girlfriend, she's having some kind of shimmy shake shivers. Then grandma's doing it. Then grandma's putting the move on you. Her father. It's just all. It's like you're on. Someone has slipped you a hallucinogen.
Yes.
Then all of a sudden, guess what? Even though we're barely together, I just had your baby. We got to get married. Meet your new family. It's like something where you want to jump off the building.
Absolutely. So it's, and I guess I read the story about him, and this is about him and his first wife. They were dating in college. She got pregnant. They got married. And then the baby, Jennifer Lynch, who later directed Aaron's favorite movie, Boxing Helena, she was born with club feet. So
it was all autobiographical. Yes. And for sure, while he's living in this set for 5 years, imagine this, the marriage broke up.
Well, and you think it must have been on the rocks. Anyway, like his wife at the time is in this movie, I guess. If you notice at one point, she's some woman digging in an alley or something.
Love on the rocks ain't no big surprise.
I heard a comedian do love on the rocks, scratch your behind. And I always thought that was the funniest thing. Anyway, the marriage. Well, the other thing I discovered, this is all behind the scenes. This episode's going to be like a David Lynch movie where we're just kind of going. There's a weird sperm floating by. Who knows what we're going to find? That's it. A weird hand.
Things will drift by. There was no ear wrapped up in tissue somewhere, you know.
That's true. That's terrifying. The guy who plays the leprous god character in the moon who's pulling the cranks was soon to be married to Sissy Spacek, and Sissy Spacek worked crew for this movie.
Yeah, and they bankrolled this.
They were
helped
well,
bankroll it.
He got money from the American Film Institute, but not enough to finish it, which is shocking.
Because it was a 20-page treatment, and they're like, this ain't enough for a movie.
They insisted he add dialogue, which he wasn't sure he wanted to. He's like, I don't think we'd do. This is what I've realized from this deep dive that I've done. David Lynch was a painter. His initial medium was he loved to paint, like whatever.
He's painting right now.
So he's still a painter, right? So when he became an artist or a director, he basically was like, I'm transferring my sensibility for the canvas to the screen. Okay. And, you know, I'm not going to stand by the painting and explain what it means. It's just
to you to
feelings.
Interpret.
It's right. It's not plot. There's no plots in a painting, right?
Really? It's surrealism. It's surrealism.
Right. That's exactly what it is.
I mean, so that's what it is.
He's transferred that sensibility to the screen, and many people love it. Not this guy.
You know, you don't go up to Dolly or Magritte and say, hey, you want to explain this to me? They're going to tell you in Spanish and in French to f*** off.
They will. They will. It's been done before. So, it's been done before. So,
So, just because he has a vision. So, it's not like I just turn the camera on and let's see what rolls.
Right.
This is a vision. He knows what's going on.
The central, like you said, the central plot is not impossible to decipher. Okay. But there are, like I said, weird little additions that make it difficult to comprehend. Like he obviously has a crappy apartment, but there's like grass on the floor or something, some weird leaves and vegetation. Why? Who knows why? No explanation.
So much things that are supposed to be sperm, but look more like intestine or umbilical cords.
They seem pretty spermy to me. They seem pretty damn spermy.
Well, they're all in the right spermy places, that's for sure. But those are big boys.
So, and I understand.
You can feed a family.
There's a scene where he's in bed with his wife who's spazzing out because she's like, I don't know, she's having a nightmare, night terror, or something along those lines. And you see him reach under the sheets and he's pulling out these giant sperms.
He's pulling something out.
And throwing them out the wall. Bam, bam, bam. And am I to interpret that, you know, when your lady love isn't giving you some attention, you just got to. You kind of rip a few off in bed and hope no one notices? Is that?
It's all about sex.
Yes.
And look what sex is going to get you. So that's why he's freaking out, because now he's in bed. What's going to happen next? I had sex that one time. Look what happened. What's going to happen now if I spilleth my seedeth again? That's why he's like, get rid of that freaking evidence.
Let me ask you this. When he looks in the radiator and he sees the weird woman with the weird, like, cheek things going on with her, who's singing a crazy song and stomping on the giant sperm, what does that say to you?
She's like an angel, I think. She's like an angel, an image of purity. I don't know why everybody has bad skin. But what is she stomping on? She's crushing the sexuality out. She's stomping on the sperm that's falling all around her. She's like a sweet little angel of purity.
And
stomping on your seed.
It really kind of turned my stomach. It was gross.
Disgusting.
It was upsetting. It was.
The first time I saw it, I thought it was all intestines.
Right. This time I know exactly. From the moment he opens his mouth at the beginning of the thing and the weird thing comes out, I'm like, oh, that's sperm. He's doing some sperm shit up in here. Lovely.
He is full of sperm. God. He is overflowing with sperm, and it's flying out because he can't control whatever the sexual desire is, and it's bringing disaster to his life. He wanted to throw some more at the neighbor across the way. God knows what she's going to produce. It's a fear of commitment.
She was after him.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was after the
hot chick across
the hall. To be clear, he does look like somebody who'd be into ska in the 80s, so maybe he's the hot ticket in town.
I've read somewhere that his crazy eraser head hairstyle was inspired by David Lynch's hairstyle at the time.
Yes, have you seen David Lynch right now?
Yes.
It's shaved on the side and big and tall. I mean, it's David Lynch.
This movie, man. This is the crazy. Now let me ask you this: when his head falls off and crashes on the ground, and a little street urchin, picks it up, it takes to the factory to get turned into erasers for pencils. What does that say to you?
No, he's lost his mind. He's lost his mind, literally and figuratively. But yeah, clearly, this is like a Salvador Dali picture, honestly. Think about like persistence of memory with like the face with the nose. What are they saying there, man? This is just nightmarish images that are not real. They're surreal. So you have clearly that he's lost his mind and it just keeps going. As he descends into his madness.
I thought
leading up for what's going to happen next.
I thought it was difficult to talk about the Forbidden Zone. This is even more difficult. Because it's like the basic plot is very simple, but there's so much bizarre stuff in it that seemingly has no connection to anything that it's hard to get a handle on it. But I mean,
it could be just a guy. I mean, it could be a 30-minute short about like a guy who gets a girl knocked up and they just have an unhappy life with their jacked up kid. But he went a little farther.
Yeah. I mean, because look, we've all been in that situation where you've got a newborn who won't stop crying and it's 3 a.m. We've all had that situation, and it is torture. So that was that moment was relatable up until the moment she's screaming, shut up, at the baby, and then packs her shit and leaves. At that point, that was a bridge too far for me. Go ahead.
Well, honestly, after that, it was like almost he was the sympathetic one. He was the one who seemed to be trying to care for this little monster baby. Although no one tried to pick him up, but he was very moist.
he's not that sympathetic, because when the saucy maid across the hall comes over and says, hey, let's do this, he puts his hand over the baby's mouth so as not to disturb any potential hookups. So
later on when he's trying to hook up again, he knocks on the door and you can hear the baby appears to be laughing at him.
Oh, God.
That was right near the end.
Let me ask you this. Oh, God. That's when I started falling asleep. There are a couple times. I watched this last night. There are a couple times I was falling asleep, and I'm like, I need to rewind this. But then I'm like, does it matter? I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to this. I could rewind it 10 minutes back or 30 minutes or 30 seconds, and I would be in the exact same position. So it's anarchy. But at the end, he unwraps the swaddling clothes of the little mutant baby, and it's just like its guts just fall out. I was like,
no, there's no falling out. It was like literally there is nothing else. And the baby really just represents like the giant sperm. I mean, that's really all it is, was that kind of head and intestines and tails and everything. It looks like a horse's head if you cut off the ears and skinned it. Oh my God. It was, and it's, it just has this pitiful sound, but you know that if you've ever had a baby, you know that where it's just crying and crying. When you have like perfectly lovely looking child and it's crying and crying, you're ready to throw it out the window. This time you got like a freak mutant with your freak mutant wife or your freak mutant husband. And this is it. This is it. Suddenly, I feel like it's 1890s and I'm living in one of those tenements in New York with a crying baby and I got no food. And what else is there? I mean, all morality gone. You got to do what you got to do to survive.
Is that the moral of the story? You got to do what you got to do to survive?
I mean, that's the nature of the beast. That's the nature of living, is to live, right?
I see. Interesting.
I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to take this baby to daycare? You're going to take it to the little schoolhouse around the corner and drop
Gymboree?
Off this? All I know is when that baby suddenly, it was not freaky enough, and then it got pox or warts or something. I'm like, ain't nobody taking this baby
to the
doctor?
You really are sick. Yeah, exactly.
Because he was like, at least he was the only one who ever spoke nicely to the baby. Even though he was going to abandon it. And of course, what do they call it? Filicide.
Then he kills it.
But, you know, at least now you know if you have a mutant sperm baby, horse head sperm baby, you can take it over and give it to the nice fireman. At least in California.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's
about
like, what was it? This Is Us? I mean, that could have been
This is
Us with a little...
Oh yeah, this is the baby is the embodiment of their sin, and this is your punishment. So, like in the slasher movies, you have sex, you die. Here, it's like the screaming scarlet letter that you're going to be saddled with forever. That all it does is lay there and suffer and cry, suffer and cry. That's all it does.
It does.
Is a constant reminder
awful,
that you
awful.
Are trapped and how terrible your life is, and it's never going to get better. This is a depressing movie.
Sad but true. Any last? Well, again, I don't know if I'd call it a horror movie. I would call it incomprehensible family drama.
I mean, if it happened in your life, you would be like, the horror, the horror. And then the end, he finally snaps because he can't get spread his seed. It's building up in him, ready to burst. But he's trapped in this freak marriage with freaks and a freak baby. So before he erupts, he stabs the baby.
Bounces pretty early.
Yeah. She has zero tolerance. Yeah. Wife bounces. He kills the baby. The baby giant blows up, and it looks like it's going to gobble him up. That was pretty freaky. I mean, let's just face it. It's all pretty freaky and depressing.
It's all pretty freaky. Any last thoughts before we move on with our lives?
Yes, even as a child, there was that Eagles song, You Can't Hide Your Lion Eyes. And even that song made me depressed. I was like, as a small child, I was like, don't get pregnant, Aaron. Don't get pregnant. It's going to ruin your life. And here it is.
That's
this
not
is the
what
manifestation.
Lying eyes is about.
Well, it's about cheating, but it's about marrying the wrong. You married the wrong person. You put aside all your dreams and hopes. They're dead. And now you got freak baby.
She's a poor girl who marries a wealthy guy across town, but, you know, late at night, that big old house gets lonely.
I guess every port of refuge has its price. Yes, I'm familiar.
That's true.
But I mean, it's all about making mistakes and making choices and having to live with it. So honestly, I wish I was teaching health class again, because I would force all the freshmen to watch this and say, wrap it up. Wrap it up, little Jimmy, because this is what your life will be. Wrap it up.
And then just play Lying Eyes every day so that they know They know.
During their warm up.
And again,
they will learn she's to hate the choices. Eagles.
I love that song, though. That's a good song. They will learn to hate the Eagles. There's a funny scene. I don't know if we ever talked about this. In Big Lebowski, Jeff Bridges gets pulled over by a cab driver and, you know, he's driving. And the cab driver's listening to the Eagles. He's like, not the Eagles. I hate the Eagles. And the cab driver pulls over and throws him out of his cab. Says, get out of here. And they were able to use some of the songs for the movie when they saw the line, I hate the fucking Eagles. Like, the other musicians were like, hey, you can have a song for free. Just good times. Anyway, should we go behind the scenes?
All right, dig it.
Here we go, behind the scenes on Eraserheads. On Eraserheads. There's only one Eraserhead, by the way.
Thank God.
When production, thank God, indeed. When production on the film took longer than expected, David Lynch had to sleep in the same room used as Henry's bedroom for over a year.
I read that was his bed. Their bed was his bed.
Yes. Eventually, it didn't start out that way, but by the end, that was the way it turned. We talked about this before.
The stables, the AFI stables.
Yes, absolutely. Stanley Kubrick made the cast of The Shining watch this film, among others, to get in the mood for filming a horror picture. Boom.
It is claustrophobic and oppressive.
Though only released at first as a quote-unquote midnight movie, like you'd go to the theaters and there would be like Rocky Horror Picture Show or Night of the Living Dead, Eraserhead was in that rotation as well. Number of directors saw it and loved it. John Waters, obviously, saw it and loved it. We talked about Kubrick. Mel Brooks saw it and offered Lynch the chance to direct The Elephant Man because of it.
And he was so loved job. It. He did quite and the good job.
Elephant Man was nominated for like 10 Oscars, for goodness sakes. So that's quite a jump.
He's not a jackass. No, I know you're implying that.
I'm not implying that. He's clearly a talented filmmaker. He has his own vision. I like plot. You got to have a plot for me to care. If it's just random nonsense, I'm out.
This has a plot. A plot. Blue Velvet. Linear stories.
Let me see. George Lucas asked Lynch to direct Star Wars Return of the Jedi, but Lynch turned it down.
Dune.
Not a good move. Terrence Malick, famed director, screened this film for potential financial backers who walked out calling the film bullshit. So Terrence Malick loved it. The potential financial backer took a hard pass. Very upsetting. We talked about that the script is thought to have been inspired by David Lynch's fear of fatherhood and how his daughter Jennifer Lynch was born with severely clubbed feet requiring extensive corrective surgery. So Jennifer even claims that her own unexpected conception and birth defects were the basis for the film's themes.
Yes, I read that. Bless her heart.
Swiss surrealist H.R. Giger, or Geiger, however you want to pronounce it, cited this as one of the greatest films he had ever seen. He came closer to realizing his vision than even his own films. And that Giger said that David Lynch declined to collaborate with him on Dune because he felt Giger had stolen his ideas.
Ooh. So
there you go. Boom. The desolate, muddy, potholed urban landscape that Henry walks through at the beginning of the film is now the site of the Beverly Center Mall. So things are going well, I guess. Yeah, and finally,
it looks like it's like Pittsburgh or something, but no, it's all filmed in LA.
It is. David Lynch refuses to say anything about Eraserhead because he wants to let viewers decide for themselves what they think it means.
Yeah.
Boom. Should we talk about the cast and crew?
Lay it on me.
Let's see. If we talked about a film by David Lynch, you know him from such things as Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks. Blue Velvet.
Firewalk with Me. Inland Empire. Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
You like Blue Velvet too, don't you? You're a big Blue Velvet fan.
Blue Velvet's amazing with old Kyle in there. I love Blue Velvet. That's when he was dating Isabella Rossellini. Or maybe they were married, but they were together.
Not married, and then they were together.
Good old David Lynch has a YouTube channel where he just tells you the temperature in Los Angeles.
He does. He does. Yes.
And he has his own coffee brand, so you can subscribe to Lynch's Coffee.
He does his own thing. Let's talk about the cast. Harry Spencer was played by Jack Nance, who's another one of the members of David Lynch's company. He's been in a ton of David Lynch things.
We saw him in something else recently. It was a non-Lynchian Ghoulies. Film.
Ghoulies.
That's right.
He was in Eraserhead. He was in Blue Velvet. He was in Dune. He was in Wild at Heart. I'm sure he was in Twin Peaks. It's all over the place.
Well, because he stuck with David and promised not to change his hairstyle for 5 years. Lynch was loyal and just kept giving him work.
That is true. Let's see. Charlotte Stewart played Mary X, the angry girlfriend / wife. I know her from Eraserhead. She was in Tremors. I thought she looked familiar to me. She's in a bunch of the Tremors.
She had a little tremor in Eraserhead, too.
You're telling me. And she was... Ava Beadle on 45 episodes of Little House on the Prairie.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
I actually wish she was Nellie Olson. I wish she grew up to be Nellie Olson. That would
Do
have
you
been...
remember who Miss Beadle is?
The teacher.
The teacher. Absolutely.
The teacher.
Isn't that funny? Let's see. Is there anybody else?
She's got a funky side. You go, Miss Beadle.
Miss Beadle. The beautiful girl across the hall was played by Judith Roberts. The only thing I could say about she was in Dead Silence in 2007. She was in You Were Never Really Here in 2017, Death Sentence, Eraserhead. But interestingly enough, she was married to Pernell Roberts for 9 years before this.
What? Movie. You got a right to pick a little fight bonanza.
That's
good. Good heavens.
He was
well,
Adam
this is 77.
Cartwright.
Yeah.
Yes, this is years. And she was like in her 40s, like when she was in this movie as the sexy woman across the hall. So there you go. Good times had by all. Shall we
Clearly
talk
the
about
the most attractive person in this film?
She was very attractive, shockingly enough. And she was all over Eraserhead. She couldn't get enough. Do you know? Okay. Ratings. Currently, Eraserhead has 90% certified fresh.
Certified fresh.
Do you know what the audience gave it?
72.
82.
Boom. See?
It's just me.
There's no car chases, so you lost interest.
I was out at that point.
It was a Baby Driver with sperm. That's true.
I didn't like Baby Driver that much.
I didn't either. I thought I would.
I thought I would too. Very disappointing. People love it though. Not my cup of tea.
I know. Yeah. People rated this 90% fresh.
That's true. Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian says, "It's beautiful and strange with its profoundly disturbing ambient sound design of industrial groaning. Has it filmed inside some collapsing factory or gigantic dying organism?" 5 out of 5. Boom.
It said they spent a year doing the post sound.
They did. Let's see. Variety staff, our old friends.
Oh my God, not Variety staff.
The mind
it was
boggles.
Like an intern from University of Chicago. It was there for a week and it was like, let's check that out.
The mind boggles to learn that Lynch labored on this pick for 5 years.
But that's a jackass comment.
Not a fan. Not a fan. Let's see.
Not a review either.
You know what? Here we go. Tim Robey of the Daily Telegraph in the UK says, "David Lynch has cleaned up his freaky feature debut, but don't worry. It's still an amazing industrial nightmare."
What does that mean? He cleaned it up.
I think they re-released a newer version, I guess. That's not the version I watched.
Initially, the baby after he stabs him, you know how it blows up, is supposed to come and eat him, was the original ending supposed to be.
That makes sense.
Sweet Jesus. What is your rating of Eraserhead?
That means he was consumed by his sexuality.
I believe it. What's your rating? For
yeah, God's I sake? Struggle. I struggle with this. Because, well, when I started watching it, I remember I was like, oh, Jesus. I don't know if I can watch this again.
This was your suggestion.
Because it is oppressive and depressing. It is a little gross.
Yep.
And disturbing. But it was just so unique. I still have to give it 4 out of 5.
Oh my God.
Wrap it
Aaron.
Up, you sons of bitches.
Aaron.
I got to. It's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece.
It's a masterpiece of shit.
It's a masterpiece of masturbation. Let's go.
I'm going to give it 1 out of 5. Exploding baby sperm creature. It's very early on. I was just like, oh, Jesus. Because it's like you said. There are bizarre non sequiturs for no reason, seemingly, or just people like spaz out or make a face or roll on the floor. And you're like, why are they doing that? You'll never know why is the answer.
No, you do know why. This is just it. I mean, it could be this stale thing where we're all sitting at the table and isn't this depressing? Now, how do I get rid of this wife and baby? Then it becomes an Alfred Hitchcock movie instead. It's just nightmares and freakouts and dementors and torment. And it is a nightmare. I mean, an unwanted pregnancy, being trapped in a loveless marriage, it is a nightmare. And this film is a representation of that nightmare.
I mean, it's hard to... I mean, I understand what you're saying and I don't disagree, but the performances are so bizarre that it's hard to even get a... It's not like you see, you know, Eraserhead like going, oh, I'm so depressed. He's just kind of doing his thing. You know, I'm here, I'm laying in bed, I'm making faces, and what's happening?
I don't think he's too bright.
Okay. Well, then how can he be depressed if he's just like, whatevs, I'm on vacation.
Oh, yeah. No, he's not on vacation in the Bahamas. He's on vacation in hell.
Well, at one point, his wife goes like, you should be taking care of the kid at night. You're on vacation. And I was like, I kind of agree, big guy. Yeah, I understand why she's screaming and running out the door. If she's on the clock 24/7, you're like, I'm just getting into bed, babe. Sorry. Yeah,
I mean, that is every lady. You know, I've been up all night. You were on vacation at work, you know.
That is 100%. Yes,
I have been the person at home with the screaming baby.
Yes.
When the man comes home and wants to relax from
this
his hard day.
This is an issue because it's true when you have the new mom at home all day with just the screaming baby. And the father's out all day working in the factory or the mines or whatever he's doing. And they come back and they're both exhausted at the end of the day, but they still have that one job. So that is I remember when we were, when Becky and I were first having Grace, we attended, it was some thing that the hospital was putting on to kind of talk to people about breastfeeding or something. And she said, the lady who was giving the talk, she's like, the two main reasons for divorce are money and childbirth. I'm like, it's a little late to spring this on us now. You know what
surprise.
I'm saying? Surprise. Surprise. So, good time.
How many times have you heard from couples that are in trouble that once we have the baby, things will be more solid? And you're like, ha, 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 ha.
No, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. I once talked to a married couple.
It's throwing a grenade in the middle of a good, even if it's a good marriage, it's going to cause ruffles.
No, it's ridiculous. It was funny. there was a couple who were married, and the husband was like in the military. So he was like away from home for long stretches. And I remember talking to them, and they both told me, this is why our marriage works. They're divorced 2 years later.
Of course.
Of course. The moment you tell me, never I need to spend especially time away. Navy.
Yeah. Yes.
I need time away from my spouse.
I need 6 months out of the year to go spend time with my other family. That's basically
correct. Yes.
And if you're the lady, that means you're always having children by yourself,
right? You're basically single mom already.
You are completely on your own, because yes. In order for him to conceive, you know, he is never going to be there when you're giving birth.
That's correct.
No.
Yeah. Anywho, on that happy note, so
wrap it up. Wrap it up. No matter what they say, I'm infertile. Wrap it up. Doctors told me I can't have kids. Wrap it up.
I'm impotent.
Liars, liars, liars.
Interesting. Good advice. So go to our pages on Facebook, Twitter, X, Threads, Instagram, TikTok. We're on YouTube. Whoop-de-doo. And a scary hand. You can also email us at the podcast that would die at gmail. That's your cue, Aaron. Anywho, we're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere the finer podcasts are available. So don't forget to like, share, rate, and review, won't you, Aaron?
Won't you please?
What?
This is more effective if you can't see my arm, actually. Yes, I realize.
I agree. You're more of a Jennifer Lynch than a David Lynch. What's your social media, for God's sakes?
I'm on all the usual media. I'm on the gram. I am the Cult of Aaron. Join the cult. I am also Don't Feed the Pigeon. Professionally, I'm on Artsy and First Dibs. I also have a couple zines for sale on my Insta. Check it out.
Very cool. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what we love to do from time to time is talk about viewer and listener mail or feedback. Aaron,
speaking of feedback, it sounds like Eraserheads coming to life in the background of your house right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. That's how we do it in our house.
All right. Well, you know, as we know, my brother Kevin does these WTF videos that I put on the Ticker Talker. So recently he did a Buckaroo Banzai. And what did our friend say as he was walking through the scene, sir?
Why is there a watermelon there? I'll tell you later.
I'll tell you later. And one of our viewers, Keith Adams on the Ticker Talker, says he, in fact, does not tell him or us later. And he actually used punctuation. So that's
nice of
him. And then in regards to Time Bandits, we have a writer who wishes to remain anonymous, but says it is one of the sexiest casts.
A writer who wishes to remain anonymous. Interesting. Interesting, interesting. Very good. Anywho, next week, we are having a very special guest. My buddy Pete from the Middle Class Film Class is doing us the honor. We are going to discuss the horror science fiction classic, The Void. Where do you see The Void? You can watch it on Peacock, AMC+, Crackle, Shudder, Plex. It is in a number of places. So
I have never heard of this. Is it in fact about someone making a poo?
Voiding their bowels? Perhaps.
Yes.
Perhaps. If it is, I'm not watching it. I'm going to tell you that right now.
So you haven't seen this movie that you've signed us up for?
This was Pete's suggestion. When we have a guest, I usually throw it to them and say, what would you like to do? We're free and easy. If we haven't done it before, generally speaking, we're down. So there you go.
Okay.
So go watch The Void at one of those places and send in your favorite scenes, favorite quotes, comments, and questions, and maybe we'll talk about it on the show. So thank you very much, and be well.
I say good day, sir.